This is Brittany Blackwell, host of the Resilient Teacher Podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, along with this podcast. Each show on the network is independently owned, and the views expressed may not represent those of other podcasts. For the best education podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Sarah McNeil. Sarah is the Vice President of Professional Development at Thinking Maps, Inc. She is a former classroom teacher of 16 years. Sarah talks with me about Thinking Maps and helping teachers help students become critical deep thinkers. So much to learn today. Thanks for listening. Oh, by the way, before you go, it'd be so cool if you helped out the podcast. And I got a couple ways in which you could do just that. One would be you could tell a friend and share the links. Another would be you could go to my website and leave a review and subscribe. And finally, how about this? You could click on the link on my website homepage that says Buy Me a Coffee. And by doing this, you could donate a dollar or two to help me address the costs associated with producing the podcast. What do you think? You're awesome. Enjoy the show.
Our brains are pattern detectors, right? And we are, our brain is an image processor, not a word processor. And so we're told time and time again that visuals are powerful for kids and right. But I never really knew how that translated, right? Am I supposed to just use pictures for everything, right? And so it is a visual that not only makes very abstract concepts concrete for kids, but it also allows me as a teacher to kind of see under the hood, right? What are they thinking? How are they thinking?
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests and they share what they know. So crank it up to 10 and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12, with Dr. Steve Mileto.
Sarah McNeil is an experienced educator and consultant with a rich background in the education management industry. Currently serving as the Vice President of Professional Development at Thinking Maps, Inc., Sarah brings over 16 years of experience to her role. Her expertise lies in K-12 education, coaching, educational consulting, and instructional design. Sarah's journey in education began as a teacher in the Los Angeles Unified School District, where she dedicated 16 years to shaping young minds. Her passion for teaching led her to transition into consulting, where she continued to impact education on a broader scale. With a bachelor's degree focused in psychology from the University of California, Los Angeles, or UCLA, Sarah possesses a strong academic foundation that complements her practical experience in the field. She is also National Board certified, reflecting her commitment to excellence in teaching and learning. Sarah, thanks so much for being on the show today, and say hi to everyone.
Hello, and thank you for having me on today. I'm excited.
So glad that you're here. And as we're getting into the talk today, the first thing I'd like to start with is, could you give our listeners a brief overview of Thinking Maps?
Absolutely. So Thinking Maps is a company that's been around for over 25 years, and it is a strategy-based company. So we don't really sell stuff. We sell a strategy. Thinking Maps are 8 visual patterns that create a visual language for thinking. They were first defined by Albert Upton and later refined by David Hyerly. And they're a consistent set of visual patterns to activate and to connect cognitive processes. So if you're thinking in a sequential manner, there's a visual that gets wired in your brain that's associated with that. If you're comparing and contrasting, we have a visual that is associated with that. And the consistency of that visual is taken with the student content to content, grade level to grade level, class period to class period. And it really just allows kids to organize, interpret, present complex information in a concrete way. So that's what we do.
Awesome. Love it. Mm-hmm. One of the things I got to ask you, so how'd you come in contact with Thinking Maps? I mean, think about it as an educator and you discover this thing called Thinking Maps. What was that like? What'd you find out? And then you transitioned into the organization. So tell us a little bit about that as well.
I know. I was sent by my principal. It was funny. She was a very innovative. I loved working for her. She was somebody that was really excited about new things out there and would send teachers there and then just let them run with it. I went to this training. It was called a training of trainers. And I have to admit, I did not know I was being trained as a trainer until it was a 5-day training until day 3. And I thought, oh, I should have taken better notes. But I almost instantly connected with it. It just made sense to me. Sometimes I think it's the simplest things in education that have the biggest impact. And so I fell in love with them. I went back. I immediately started using them with my students. Saw a real impact right away. I always say that as an educator, things come and things go. Your whole career. It's kind of the beauty and agony of our profession. and sometimes they come back, right, in a new package. But Thinking Maps never left, which I think shows you the power of it for me and for others. I tell teachers that if you ever think in thinking maps, it'll never go away. If you use them kind of on occasion, then it's one more thing that can disappear. And then eventually I went to the writing training. There's a writing program associated with it. And that really just blew my mind. I was not a very good writing teacher, I have to say. We aren't really taught how to teach writing in our teacher credentialing programs, I have discovered.
Understand.
And so, yes, right?
Yes.
And so I had been on a quest and I found either super formulaic, right? Or very inspiring. But then I would get back in my classroom and say, I have no idea how to make this happen, right? I was blown away at the workshop and then came back and went, And I felt that the maps and the way that this program rolled out taught me how to be a writing teacher versus how to follow a program. And that is, I think, what pulled me out of the classroom. So I went back and then the writing became a big passion of mine. I went from not a very good writing teacher to being a very passionate writing teacher. And then I got a call out of the blue from the owner of the company. There were wildfires happening in California and their consultant couldn't come. So they said, could you do it? And I said, okay. I was 8 months pregnant, went to a K-8 school and demoed in every single classroom that day.
Wow.
And so I started doing per diem work on the side for them. And then I started having children of my own and, you know, the balance of the two. And I finally kind of came to a fork in the road. So I either was going to continue being a classroom teacher, which truly was a passion for me, or leave and do this, which had also become a passion for me. And honestly, I fell in love with teachers and I didn't think I'd enjoy teaching teachers, but I loved teaching teachers as much as I loved teaching kids. And so I made the leap and was a consultant. And then I find myself here as vice president of professional development.
That's awesome. Very cool. It's neat when you find out how people, make their shift through organization, stuff like that. So I'm guessing that you have some firm convictions about, how this might impact or why, thinking maps, might be provide benefits for teachers and students in the classroom. So how about we talk about that for a minute?
Yes, I do. I have very strong feelings about that. In fact, I think about, could I ever train, be a consultant or a trainer for something else? And it would have to be something I felt this passionate about. It really would, because the fun thing about training this is I would say 99% of the time, the teachers love it. And if you are a person that trains teachers, that is not always the case. So they're simple. Honestly, this is what they are circles and squares and lines and arrows. And you think, how can this have such an impact? But our brains are pattern detectors. Right. And our brain is an image processor, not a word processor. And so we're told time and time again that visuals are powerful for kids. And right. But I never really knew how that translated. Right. Am I supposed to just use pictures for everything? Right. And so it is a visual that not only makes very abstract concepts concrete for kids, but it also allows me as a teacher to kind of see under the hood, right? What are they thinking? How are they thinking? It allows them to do the same thing. So we sequence in kindergarten and we sequence in AP calculus. And just imagine using the same visual for that thought process all the way through. The efficiency, the time save, it just allows the kid, they'll read something and the maps will float in their head. Like, oh, that's comparing, contrasting. Oh, I see this. Note-taking. I'm on my third child going through high school, and note-taking is a skill. It is a mystery to many, right?
Yes.
Either they're copying it or they're copying off the board or they're getting the teacher's notes. And the thing about the maps is they're not, you don't run them off, right? It's not created ahead of time. It is constructed by the person who's thinking through something. So if you're someone who sees things in smaller chunks, you've got a map that reflects that. If you're someone who sees things in larger chunks, that reflects that. And it has just been incredibly, I'll have teachers who come in thinking, oh, this is a graphic organizer. It's like, why am I here for this many days for a graphic organizer? And they leave like, oh, this is a tool for thinking that can be used for life at any level, at any content area.
I love that. That's, you know, and I think this lends itself to when we're talking about, because one of the things, I'm a former history teacher and taught history for a bunch of years. And, you know, one of the things that I always loved is when kids start really understanding what you're talking about or the impact of what you're talking about and things like this. Can you kind of go towards that with, you know, how thinking maps can help them make those connections?
Yeah, it starts with the language, right? There is cognitive language associated with thinking. So the fact that you just said when they see the impact of something, well, that immediately tells me that you're thinking in a cause and effect manner, because impact is associated with cause and effect thinking. So I can hear a lecture, I can get a question, I can be assigned a prompt or a task. Our standards, right? All of our standards have two parts. There's the content we're required to convey, and then there's the cognitive behavior they're expected to engage in the context of getting that, right? So the causes of the American Revolution, right? Well, I am immediately able to know, oh, you're asking me to think in this manner. And then I have this, I kind of think of it as a conceptual net, right? That I can capture what it is that you want me to understand. And I'm capturing it in a way that makes sense to me because I'm constructing it myself. So truly, it wouldn't matter what you were asking me to do. I would be able to think, you know, we use metacognition now. I feel like it's one of those buzzwords again in education. Like, what does that mean exactly? And it means thinking about your thinking, being able to recognize how you're thinking about something, right? And reflect on it. And the maps just make that concrete. So you want me to understand the impact of this war or this event in history? Boom, I have a visual I can use. I can capture that. You can see what I'm talking about. I could write off of it, speak off of it. And I recognize that I'm thinking in this manner.
Very cool. Appreciate that you talking about that. All right. So something I've heard mentioned is something called, that there's something that exists called a critical thinking gap. Can you talk about what that is and how thinking maps can help with that?
Yes. It's, we talk a lot about the knowing and doing gap. I think there's not a teacher out there that doesn't think, oh yeah, I know I have to teach critical thinking. This isn't, you read article after article after article, you know, our standards are, you know, the kids have to be able to critical think. What does that mean? Like, what is the actual practical application of that in a classroom? When I was a baby teacher, because I started teaching at like 21, fresh out of college, first thing I did was I bought a critical thinking book.
Nice.
I still remember, right? It had puzzles in it and, you know, it was, and critical thinking is, first of all, like, what do we mean by that, right? It's thinking in evaluatively, inductively, it's combining cognitive processes in a variety of ways, right? It's all those higher order thinking skills. And the beauty of the maps is that they're visible. So you want me to think about something. I use we say maps in combination. So I'm never going to think about something in a singular way. right? I have to use multiple maps, aka multiple ways of thinking, to tackle something. And as they become more sophisticated in their use of the maps, then they kind of grow intellectually. So it has to be integrated. You can't teach critical thinking as a separate subject. Let's put it this way. It's based in content. And as they are learning the academic language, as they are applying that thinking, as they start applying that thinking in more complex ways, then they're meeting the critical thinking task. I feel like we assign a lot of critical thinking and we don't explicitly teach critical thinking. I don't know if that, does that make sense?
Oh, that makes very much sense. It actually goes back to what you started off with the idea that, you know, not being taught a lot about how to teach writing either. It kind of goes right with that, hand in hand, the idea that, you know, there's at some point understanding about how we think, how we interpret, how we get to understanding and stuff like this. Sometimes those come as we realize, ooh, I think I, you know, sorry, all of a sudden I had this old commercial in my head. This is not sponsored by V8, but all of a sudden I was thinking, you know.
I know, V8 moment. I do those too, Steven.
Exactly. You know, it's like, and I think that's, as a teacher, especially when you're starting, all of a sudden some of those light bulbs start going off when you start realizing. And in case of many of us, we happen to be in schools where they are encouraging that, but it is interesting what you're just talking about, because you can think back to those moments when you suddenly went, I wonder if there's a tool to help me figure this out.
Exactly. And that was what the maps were for me. And for, you know, I would say almost everyone I train, they're like, oh, this is something, it's an actual tool to do what I'm asking them to do. You know, they talk about rigor all the time, you know, get rigorous assignments, rigorous. And I feel like we assign these rigorous assignments, then they can't do them. Right. So we just back up again and we get simpler and simpler and simpler. And we back where we started.
Yes.
And the maps use the way they should be. So a lot of people water ski with the maps, right? They just kind of, oh, I can use a map for that. Like, oh, but to really deep sea dive with them, to really use them at the level that they're designed to be used, that really takes a lot of thinking on the teacher as well, which is really fascinating, because when you start using the maps, you have to think about your curriculum so differently. You have to say, like, okay, what kind of thinking am I asking my students to do? That alone is a shift, I think.
Oh, that's a huge shift. And I love the reference of water skiing versus deep diving. So that really helps understand that too. So I like that. That's all right. So let's talk a little bit about when you're working with schools or districts. I mean, what have you found works to help deal with, you know, resistance or challenges you might face?
So I do a lot of training of trainers, and I think that, you know, when I'm in the room and people are excited and they get it, but there's always this anxiety of, I have to go back and train my colleagues. Or there's certain teachers that they can think of who really they just don't think are going to get on board. And I am a firm believer that it is truly a rare teacher who won't try something that they see works. But not everyone, when you roll out a new initiative, is going to be like, yeah, another initiative, right? So I'm like, just people, especially as, you know, they used to say we were veteran teachers. Now we're seasoned teachers, right? Like I'm a piece of beef jerky. I'm so seasoned, right?
There you go.
But I'm like, they have been through so many initiatives. I feel like they just say, wait. Oh, that one's gone. See, I didn't even have to do anything. So first of all, I think they have to see that it's going to stay around for a while, but really they have to see that it works. If it works, I think it's a rare teacher that won't do it. And so patience is what I, you know, say to the trainers. You'll have people that'll jump on board and it'll start to work. It does. I mean, that I can say unequivocally that it works. And then they'll start to see it. And then more and more, you'll get people on board. And then of course, leadership is huge. You know, you have to have someone who at a leadership level who believes in it, is willing to give the time and the space for them to really integrate it into their toolkit. So I just say, wait and show them that it works. And I think that most teachers then will start to say, okay, what is this? You know, and that it lasts more than a year.
Yeah, that's awesome because, yes, if it doesn't last more than a year, then you got another problem. So it's like...
You got another thing coming down the road and they're like, all right.
Yes, exactly. Somebody's changed in an office someplace and said, okay, next. And
right, exactly.
That's awesome because I think being able to address sometimes those challenges or thoughts, and especially when someone might be thinking this too shall pass, and you know, it's like no, don't go there. That's
and I also, it is the, there's so many initiatives. I mean, we know this. This is teacher. I mean, I just constantly hear overwhelmed teachers, and they are, and it's real. And but it, if the MAPS done well, are what can also make all of those other initiatives happen. So you, it's the convincing people that it's not something extra, that it's integrated into anything. So any initiative that requires you to think, you can use the MAPS. And so it also becomes for the teachers, I think, a way to manage all that is being thrown at them. So if I'm being asked to think in this new science adoption, I'm being asked to think in this new math curriculum that you've handed me, and I'm asked to think, this is at an elementary level, and I'm asked to think, you know, about the, in a new SEL program, if I can use the same tool for all three, that's going to help me manage. So there's also showing people those connections, I think, helps.
Excellent. Love it. So let's talk a little bit about this. You know, you are in the role of, you work professional development with Thinking Maps. And, you know, can you talk a little bit about what that means when you're going to successfully implement Thinking Maps?
I feel like it's the knowing and doing gap again, right? We know that a one-day training of anything is a good opportunity to have lunch with your friends, right? I mean, one and done training. The research has been around forever, right? You can't, it's just like with the kids. It would be, I can't show you something once and then expect you to integrate it. So professional development is key, but not a one day. It can't be one day. So you've got to have it consistently followed up. You have to keep it at the forefront. Professional and teachers, when we go back to the critical thinking conversation, I've read so many things that teachers are really clamoring for professional development in critical thinking and getting tools for that. But it's time and it's follow-up. So we train teachers and we give them a plan, a very clear plan, hopefully realistic plan in the context of no PD time, no days to do it, but it's a 1 day training and then follow-ups. And the follow-ups can be anywhere from 45 minutes if it fits into a department meeting or a grade level meeting or a staff meeting. But it's designed to have consistency over time and to have support from the trainers that we train or from us if we come in. I think a combination is the best because having someone sweep in and sweep back out again without having boots on the ground, right? That also doesn't work.
Well, you got that right. You know, this is going to date me when I say this, but you're talking to someone who I'll never forget when I went to some training in a school system when I was a teacher, and they had not quite outfitted the entire school system yet with computers. This is what I mean by dating me a little bit. And that's what they were in the process of doing. So they put us through training anyway about when we get computers, this is one of the programs that you'll be able to use. And, you know, we're in a room and they're talking up there on the screen and there's no computers in there. So we're not able to do it. And it's like, yeah, that was very effective.
That's the other thing. I think so many teachers go to PDs that are not applicable. A, right? Immediately. Right. Or you're just like, what are you talking about?
Right.
So yeah, that's hard. Although I think we both just dated ourselves with our V8
comment. Yes, I think that did too. So
yeah, we're good.
Nice. I'm just glad you got it. So I'm good. We're
got it.
Yeah. You know, let's take a second to talk about this. I mean, how do you measure the effectiveness of Thinking Maps? That, you know, how do you know that it's working?
We have a couple tools that we give people. They're called observation forms, and they're for the teachers, but also for, you know, coaches or anybody else. And it's if change is actually taking place, student behaviors change and teacher behaviors change, right? So if I'm asked to go to a school, you know, do a walkthrough, Sarah, and see if, you know, we're a thinking map school and I see it on the walls. Okay. You know, you can put up a map on a wall. That doesn't mean that you're using them. So if a school is actually thinking in this way, I should see it when I walk in instruction. I should see students grabbing it on their own, right? And using it as a tool themselves, independent from the teacher. So it really should be integrated. And that's what those kind of observation forms help you say, okay, once you've done this, these are the things you should see for students and for teachers if it's actually, you know, becoming embedded. Then, you know, in secondary, you can do action research, you know, use the maps with first period and don't use them with second period and see, right? See if it made an impact. And then we also have, I mean, we have data. We have data of the successes and the, you know, we have a independent third party who did, you know, a study and, you know, it works. But as far as the classroom and the teacher, I mean, the teacher in the classroom, I swapped that, you know, I think those observation forms are really helpful. So what should I be, because I don't want to have to think about it. Like, I'm sure I could come up with it as a teacher, but just help me say, what should I be seeing and what should I be doing? So we have tools for that. And then we have, you know, actual data from studies and scores, et cetera.
Love it. Love it. Thank you. All right. So let's talk a little bit about this for a second. You know, I'm sure you got some stories to share about successes. Got something you could share with us?
So many. I should probably share broader ones rather than just my personal experiences as well. Although, I mean, I just trained teachers and this woman went back and used it they were writing claims. And within a week, she sent back, like, look at the difference in their writing. And it was the organizational piece, right? To think through something before you write is the key. So, you know, I have all of those stories, but we also have one of the ones that I love was there's a Pace Brantley. It's a school in Florida, and it's actually a private school for students with identified learning disabilities. And there was a student there who spoke his parents spoke Mandarin. They were hearing. He was legally deaf and blind. And there was there was the academic impact that was there, absolutely. But on a personal level, the student was about to have eye surgery and they were wanting to communicate to him, you know, to lower his stress about this. And they use what we call a flow map, which is sequencing. So using pictures, and they were able to walk him through what was going to happen to really lessen his stress, right? So that example I love. There's Cherry Creek School District in Denver, and their ELD department, they say that, they were saying that there's a great quote in there. I think it's that they're no longer assigning thinking, they're teaching thinking. I hope that's one from Cherry Creek. If it wasn't you, I apologize. But, you know, they won an excellence for award in the state of Colorado, and they, you know, the top 10 districts in the state that were able to really move their students into academic English, right? To have great gains. I could go. Lucia Marr is a district out here. They implemented thinking maps, and in 1 year, in eighth grade, their kids jumped from like 12% to 45% in their scores. I mean, that just unbelievable. And that was me, honestly. I went back. I had been trying to teach writing to my, and I, by the way, remember I said you either had formulaic or inspirational?
Yes.
I went the formulaic route. I admit it. I did. I worked with kids that were, you know, struggling kids. And so I was working very hard to teach them writing that was painful to read.
Nice.
It was horrible. And I just was at a loss. And I went back and I used the maps to help them organize their thinking and think. And I had, you know, as always, we all do, this isn't just me, but a wide range of grade level, you know, abilities in my room. And in 2 weeks, they were producing writing that I couldn't get out of them by doing this formula. for you know, so far in the entire school year, which is honestly why I left the classroom, because I just was, I was sold. So on our website, I know I should tell you about this later, but we have this results and their customer stories. They're like case studies. And I love them because they're more anecdotal. I mean, yes, we have the data too, you know, the big jumps, but they're all stories. And the stories are what get to me.
Awesome. I love it. That's cool. I appreciate you sharing and cool. Cause we're going to talk in just a second about where we're going to send people. So before we get there, just know that that's coming up and you'll know where to go find those stories.
So
oh, it's good. All right. So let's do a scenario here. If you were the closing keynote speaker at a meeting of teachers and administrators, what would you want them to remember about Thinking Maps when they left?
I think it's that they empower everybody, all the different students that we, you know, the kids that are, you know, working beyond what the expectations are, kids that are struggling, kids that, teachers, it empowers teachers. It, you know, we're in a whole new generation now. We really are. And
yes.
And they have to think. They have to think. And I think that whole, you know, the whole COVID mess that we all went through, right? I think that showed us more than anything that kids need to be able to independently think. They do not need to come to school to get information. They have every bit of information they would ever need at their fingertips. They have to learn how to think about it. They have to learn how to recognize the source. Is it a valid source? Is it a biased source? Is it right? Integrate that information, synthesize it in some way unique to them, right? And then communicate it. And I feel like the maps empower everyone to be able to do that. Everybody. It's a tool for everyone, teachers, students, parents. I mean, if you have that tool, you know the language, you can recognize it and use it for life. It can be useful. Like, that's what I would want them to know, that it empowers every single person at your school site, no matter what the grade level or content area.
Love it. That's awesome. And then that is powerful. That is very cool. All right, Sarah, now's the time. Where can our listeners find additional information to learn more about Thinking Maps?
All right. We have our website, thinkingmaps.com. And there you will find, the customer stories I was telling you about. There'll be videos kind of giving you the neuroscience behind what we do. There's a lot on there that's very informative and helpful. And also you can reach out and talk to someone in person if you'd like about it. So thinkingmaps.com.
Very cool. I'll put that in my show notes so it's easy to find and connect with Thinking Maps. So good stuff. So I got two last questions to ask you, Sarah, and they're just questions I like to ask my guests. And the first one goes like this. How do you keep going when so much is going on that you may want to quit?
One of my educational mentors, Jane Buckner, she wrote actually that writing program I was referencing, always said that you should follow your true north. And I say that a lot in the trainings, that, you know, you should teach the kids and not the program, right? Like, I think so many people are trying to follow something that they're not seeing the kid right in front of them. And so educators are smart, they are capable, they are creative, they're incredibly hardworking, and they know their kids. And so I think that sometimes you're drowning in the stuff. And I think you should follow your true north. Whatever's best for that kid.
Love it. Awesome answer. Thank you so much. Last question for you. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If so, who was it? And what would you say if given the chance to say thank you?
You know, I listened to your podcast and love it. So I knew that this was coming and I had to think about it. And I love that you were a history teacher. I have to tell you that I did not attend school regularly as a child. My parents were folk singers who taught history through folk song.
Nice.
So I was raised on a bus and I was touring the country doing concerts. And so I was in and out of school a lot. And so I was thinking, okay, so what teacher when I was in and out so much really impacted me. And I would have to say it was my fifth and sixth grade teacher, and his name was Mr. Lindblom. We called him Mr. L. And I was one of these classrooms where I would come, you know, you're gone as a kid and then you come up, you just appear in the classroom for a while and then you'd go off again and you'd come back. And so not only did he make that easier for me, but he was so creative. You know, we did so many different things in that class. We did tininkling. I don't know if you know that, but it's a dance that you do.
Yeah, I do not know.
You know, isn't that crazy? It's such a creative way of learning. He made learning very fun, but really rigorous and engaging. And it was a class that I was as happy at school as I was on the bus. And that was not always the case. It was hard to go from, you know, being on a bus with my family and traveling to being in a classroom. And I took a lot of the things that he did and integrated it into my classroom when I became a teacher. So I would say thank you, Mr. L, although I he's no longer with us, but he was big for me, Mr. Lindblom.
Very cool. Thank you so much. Sarah, thanks for sharing Thinking Maps with us. What an awesome focus. Wishing you the best in all that you do.
Thank you so much.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmoletto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.